This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Our next guest was a starter on that 82 UNC squad, would end up becoming the head coach at Notre Dame, North Carolina, FAU, and SMU. Joining us here on the show this morning for the Madness of March is Matt Doherty. Matt, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on the show. It was wonderful hearing those highlights and those voices and Gus Johnson, Gary Bender. I mean, those were exciting times.
No doubt about it. And now without the NCAA tournament, it means a little bit more. And you were part of one of the great games in college basketball history. Let's go back to the beginning for you at North Carolina. You were a McDonald's All-American. You had many schools that were interested in you. Dean Smith, though, came calling. What was it about North Carolina and Dean Smith that sold you on the Tar Heels?
Well, I think the first thing, I'm from Long Island, New York, and the Big East was just forming in 1979. I wanted to play in the league. I was really interested at Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, and Notre Dame. Notre Dame was an independent at the time. So I really wanted to play in the league, the excitement of a league. I was wired that way growing up. I played for Bob McKillop in high school, who's now the head coach at Davidson. Played at Holy Trinity High School, and we had a great Catholic league back then. And then Dick Zeitler, with Dick Zeitler, we won the state championship and ironically played against Freddie Brown of Georgetown and Ed Pickney of Villanova in the semifinals. They were at Adelaide Stevenson. So I enjoyed the excitement, the energy of conference play, and there was no better league than the ACC. So then you look at the ACC and you say, who has the best chance of winning a national championship each year? And that was North Carolina. And then on top of that, you know, the way Coach Smith played, I knew he'd appreciate what I could do as opposed to what I couldn't. I knew at that early age what I couldn't do. I wasn't a great athlete, but I could pass, handle, and shoot the ball and play with savvy, and those are things that he really valued.
Certainly Dean Smith was a legend by the time you got to campus in Chapel Hill, but he had not won a national championship yet. That was the one hole on his resume. When you guys enter the 1982 season, and you guys are pretty loaded, obviously, Sam Perkins, James Worthy, yourself, Michael Jordan, was there ever a sense, hey, we got to get one for Dean, or is that just a narrative that the national media would talk about?
No, we did. I mean, we did internally. We certainly, I mean, a couple of things. One, it sounds very unselfish, right? You want to serve, but it's also selfish because the Carolina basketball family is real. I mean, you've got about 200 players, and there's nothing like going to a reunion and going over to Mitch Kupchak or Tyler Hansborough or Ty Lawson, guys that I don't really know, but you know because of the thread of Carolina basketball, and saying, yeah, you guys are pretty good, but we got to miss first. So, you know, that's a pretty cool feeling to have a little bit of bragging rights within the Carolina family.
You guys were a very good team that year. You were one of the best teams preseason-wise in the nation. But when you got onto the floor, what did you sense about the team and about the talent? Were you guys better than you would have thought, as good? Did you think there was more work to be done when you guys first started playing together that season?
Well, the thing was, we went to the championship game the year before. And the only player we lost we lost two starters, Mike Pepper and Al Wood. I was the sixth man the year before. So I stepped into the starting role for basically Michael Pepper, and you know, this guy named Michael Jordan came in and stepped in for Al Wood. So it was basically the same team, and we knew we were good. We knew what we were capable of. We had really good guys. I think that's such an important thing to recognize, the high character of the guys, the unselfishness. James Worthy was the first player picked in the draft that year, and he was an All-American, the player of the, you know, MVP of the Final Four. He only averaged 15 points a game. Everyone jokes about Dean Smith was the only one that could keep Michael under 20 points a game. We had really good players. You know, even after that, we had Kenny Smith and Brad Daugherty. And the rules were such that you didn't have a shot clock, you didn't have a three-point line, and we were very patient. We were going to get good shots and hit the open man. And so, you know, there are certain memories through that season where the leadership of a Jimmy Black and a James Worthy carried us through some challenging games. Our biggest concern was our depth. We didn't have great depth. You know, we had, you know, Jimmy Braddock came in at the point for Jimmy Black. We had Buzz Peterson. We had Chris Brust. But we were a little bit thin, so injury was a concern. Sam Perkins got sick and missed a couple of games, and I think we lost one of those at home. We lost to Wake Forest. So we had to stay healthy, and that's where luck comes into play.
Matt Daugherty joins us this morning on the show. The Madness of March, reliving some of the great moments in NCAA tournament history, the 82 National Championship game. You enter the NCAA tournament as a one seed. Georgetown is as well. But you guys get a bit of a scare in the first game that you play against number 9 seed James Madison. You survive at 52-50. Would it be a sign of things to come? You guys played a lot of tight games in that tournament. What do you remember from a tough game against the 9 seed in your first matchup?
Yeah, that was in Charlotte. Lou Campanelli was the coach who ended up coaching at Cal, where he coached Jason Kidd. They played a flex offense. They were kind of a grinded out team. A lot of teams that go on to win the championship win those close games early. And, you know, is it overconfidence? Is it expectations? Is it the human nature comes into play? You know, kids, human beings, we're not robots. So you can say, oh, you plug it in. Yeah, the spread says they should win by 22 points, and you blow them out by two. So it was certainly a scare. But when you're in the moment, when you're in the game, you're playing. You're just playing one possession at a time and trying to figure it out. And then you deal with the repercussions afterwards, whether it's victory or defeat.
You could make the argument the 1982 Final Four is the most talented Final Four ever assembled, because not only did you guys have future NBA all-stars and all-timers in Worthy and Michael Jordan. You face off against a Georgetown team led by Patrick Ewing. There was also Phi Slamajama in that Final Four that you guys had to play in the Final Four. And so you guys take on Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler in the Final Four, and you end up winning that game. What was that matchup like just to get to a national championship game?
Well, back then, the AAU circuit wasn't as big in high school basketball. And then Texas had some unique restrictions because it was such a football state at the time, and it still is to a certain extent. But the high school basketball players weren't really well known outside of Texas. And then all of a sudden, and Olajuwon, I don't know if Olajuwon started that year. He might have come off the bench. Maybe he did, but he wasn't, you know, a polished player like he became in the NBA. But I remember, you know, introductions, and they went by position, and you go out to half court and shake hands, and I'm shaking hands with Clyde Drexler, you know, and that's my man. That's who I'm going to try to guard. Now, fortunately, I had some experience in practice and in pickup games trying to guard Michael Jordan. So I tried not to embarrass myself. That was my defensive mode, admitting that publicly on the air. Like, don't get embarrassed. So it really is fascinating. Louisville was in the Final Four, and they had Rodney McRae, who ended up having a great career, mainly with the Houston Rockets. So, yes, it was an extremely talented Final Four. And that's why I get a little fired up when some of these pundits now say, oh, that's a great team, that's a great team, or he's a great player, you know, and I'm like, dude, whoa, pump the brakes. that guy wouldn't have started on our 1982 national championship team. He wouldn't have gotten time in that Final Four, because that's how good those guys were. I mean, Sam Perkins played 4 years. James Worthy played three. Michael Jordan played three. Nowadays, those guys are one and done.
No doubt. And it's a time when the real true giants of college basketball ruled the earth, where Georgetown is in the Final Four almost every year. You had Phi Slamma Jamma, yourselves. They were really the titans of the sport, where we don't really have that anymore because, as you mentioned, guys don't stick around long enough. So you guys end up beating Houston 68-63, and now the matchup against Georgetown. At this point in time, John Thompson has Hoya paranoia. He's got the Georgetown program humming. They are great villains for the sport of basketball, and Patrick Ewing is one of these guys that you wonder, how can you possibly stop this guy? Entering this national championship game, 2-1 seeds, two behemoths, you and Georgetown, what's your feeling going up against a guy like Ewing that kind of cast a shadow over everything in college hoops?
Well, he came out and goaltended, I think, the first five shots of the game. Ironically, I didn't realize it till watching the re-air on Saturday that I scored the first actual basket of that game for Carolina, the ball that actually went through the hoop. And but we were not fazed. See, we played against Ralph Sampson. People don't know Ralph Sampson was 7'4". He was like a 7'4" Kevin Garnett. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we had to go against Sampson, you know, 2-3 times a year. We played him 3 times that year. So in terms of defending the goal and blocking shots around the rim, we faced that, so this was not something that scared us. As a matter of fact, I remember after about the third, fourth goaltend, huddling up the team, saying, hey, you know, they're trying to intimidate us. Screw that. Just keep throwing it inside, James, and turn around and shoot it. Let them goaltend. And so we were not, intimidated at all. The thing that impressed me about Patrick at that point, I don't think he was really known as a scorer. More as a defensive shot blocker. And he came out and was hitting turnaround jumpers and really some nice moves around the basket. As I look back, his first shot was a turnaround on the baseline, on the left baseline, where he was behind the backboard a little bit. And that high arcing turnaround jumper was really tough to stop.
Matt Doherty joins us for the 1982 National Championship game from the UNC Tar Heels. Having the banner, hanging the banner, and that crazy shot by, well, the crazy ending, rather, and the great shot by Michael Jordan as we relive that night here on on CBS Sports Radio. You know, as that game goes on, it ends up becoming an instant classic. Back and forth you guys go. When you're watching it on TV last weekend, does a lot of the memories of being in the moment come back to you, or do you notice a lot of things that maybe you didn't realize as you were playing the game?
I think both. This was the first time since probably like May of 1982 where I watched it in full.
Really?
Even though President Trump, you know, had the press conference, my family watched it on YouTube and the second half. And it was really cool to watch it with my wife and two kids. I have a 22-year-old and a 20-year-old. My daughter attends the University of North Carolina. And so to see their reactions, and a lot of times the reaction was more towards the shorts and how dark my hair was. And, you know, like, you know, Michael Jordan really struggled at times in that game. I mean, he finished with, I think, 19 and had a great layup over Ewing and obviously hit the game winner. But he turned the ball over a couple of times, had his shot blocked. And to see, you know, hear Billy Packer say, oh, this freshman's, you know, nervous. And, you know, you're like, wow, if he only knew, like how, you know, this guy would maybe be the best player of all time. So you go back and you see some moments, and I always think back to the mistakes. I think, I don't know if I'm wired maybe a little different, but, you know, I always cringe. You know, I missed a big foul shot at the front end of a 1-on-1 with a minute and 30 to go. You know, some other turnovers, they stick with me. And as I watch the game, it's like, you know what, I was okay. Yeah, I made some mistakes, but, you know, I didn't embarrass myself. That
That's the bar.
I look like I played with confidence, even though there were a lot of butterflies at times.
So take us inside a young Michael Jordan. What was he like at that point in time? How did he adapt to the team? How did you guys look at him?
Well, Michael came in and was, somewhat cocky. And Coach Smith always made sure the star freshman was kind of, squashed a little bit. But he had a gift of trying to control the temperament a little bit, but also allowing him to flourish. And he started him. I think Michael was like the first starter as a freshman. I think James Worthy started as a freshman. Sam did. But the first freshman to start his first game might have been Phil Ford. And so that was unique. But Michael, we all respected him because, one, he was talented as all get out. And two, he was a sponge. He listened, he learned, and he competed. And to see him early in practice, his ability to go into the lane and hang and be able to find the basket and lay it up with spin and touch was really remarkable. And then, obviously, his defensive abilities. The thing that really jumps out when you watch those games, to me, one of the first things is with the short shorts, you can really see how long the arms are on some of these players and how big their hands are. I mean, Sam Perkins' arms literally almost touch his knees. Patrick Ewing, Michael Jordan, the length on those players was remarkable.
Matt Doherty joins us to relive the 1982 National Championship game. It's back and forth all day long, all night long, late. Georgetown leads the game, and then Michael hits the go-ahead jumper. And then there's a mad scramble at the end. Georgetown brings back the ball, trailing by one. They're trying to set up a play. They can't do so. And then the errant pass right to James Worthy, which ends up going down as a blunder in the NCAA tournament's history. They come back down the floor. There's a couple of free throws. There's no timeout taken by John Thompson, or none, rather, left for Thompson right to take. And so they've got to heave one up. What do you remember about that crazy, mad scramble final couple of seconds that you're on the floor for?
Well, I had missed a foul shot earlier. And so, but I was just looking for my man. You know, I was guarding, I think, Eric Smith. So I was just, trying to be in good defensive position. So I just, at the last minute, saw Freddie throw the ball to James and James dribbling down the court. And then I was just hoping he'd make the foul shots. You know, there's no three-point line. And then looking at the game again the other day, realizing that, maybe John Thompson wished he didn't call a timeout. I think he probably was trying to ice James, but he really could have used it to call timeout on the rebound and then at least have a chance to throw it to Ewing in the lane and maybe tip it in for the victory. But you feel for Freddie. I played against Freddie in high school. It could have been any one of us. I mean, I missed a foul shot. I could have been the GOAT. Not the greatest of all time, but the GOAT in that game. And you think of Bill Buckner when the ball, Mookie Wilson's grounder went through his, or Bill,
Bill Buckner.
Bill Buckner, but I forget who hit the ball through his legs, and I think Mookie Wilson scored or Ray Knight scored. And, that's the risk. And that's the old adage, thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, not to quote another station, but that's sports, and that's why it's the best reality TV in the world. You don't know what's going to happen. It's not scripted. And so for that to happen is agonizing. It happened, ironically, 11 years later when Chris Webber called a timeout, Michigan playing North Carolina again in the Superdome.
Yep, exactly right. And so I just wanted to know from an inside the huddle standpoint, Worthy had the game of the day, the game of the night for any of the players that were on the floor. He was fantastic. But did Dean Smith want to shift the ball to Michael for that final shot?
I don't recall that. This is what I do recall. 32 seconds to go, calls timeout. And he was the master. And I run a leadership practice now. And I talk a lot about communication and obviously leadership. And his leadership in that moment was spectacular because he always would smile in times of duress and give us the needed confidence, because everyone's going to defer to the leader, and 50% of communication is body language. So Coach Smith was very relaxed, and he would smile, and there'd be a twinkle in his eye. And in other games, he would say, wouldn't it be fun to win this game? Well, in that game, he said, we're right where we want to be. This is what we're going to do. Now, he knew, he felt they were going to come out in a zone, because he said that John Thompson really, really loved James Worthy and wanted to make sure that Worthy wasn't getting the ball inside. So they went into a zone, and we went into what we call our T game, which is just an offense against the zone. And I do believe this. When we broke the huddle, I think Coach Smith went up to every player, because I know he went up to me, and he said, if you're open, knock it down. Okay, now he may have whispered it to me and yelled it at Michael Jordan, but he did say it. And so that's the confidence of a leader, and especially against the zone, you can really only put your players in position and trust that they'll make the right play. And to this day, D.A., it blows me away to see Michael Jordan catch that ball with 17 seconds to go and fire it in, because he didn't have a great game up to that point. He had a good game, but, and he's a freshman. He's a freshman with James Worthy and Sam Perkins on the court. There's 63,000 people at the game. It's the first time they played in the domed arena. And he could have easily shot faked the ball and moved it, but he took it. I mean, Ed Spriggs and Eric Smith were within range where, it wasn't like it was a wide open shot. I mean, it was an open shot, but he could have easily pump faked it and kicked it. But that's Michael Jordan that we have grown to know and love, that he has it. He has whatever you want to call it. He has it. And that came through on that final shot in 1982.
It's one of the great games in NCAA tournament history. It was replayed last weekend by CBS. UNC wins the first title for Dean Smith, 63-62 in the 1982 Final Four. Matt Doherty joining us, a starter on that Tar Heels team this morning on the show. Well, Coach, this was so much fun to do. Thanks for being so generous with your time. I know this was a big block of time we asked you to do, but this was so much fun. We really appreciate it around here. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and it was a real honor to be a part of that CBS broadcast, and thank you, DA, for having me on this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Coach. Hopefully we can catch up again.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.